Hi, my name is Francis.
And I'm Alice.
And welcome to this week's episode of Two Friends in a Pod, a place for friends to catch up on all things movies, music, TV, and pop culture.
We're back. Another episode. You guys don't know this.
Guys. You didn't see this one coming.
You guys didn't know this, but we didn't record last week.
Oh my God.
And it feels like it's been ages, but actually I've seen you a lot and talked to you like every day. So it doesn't feel like time has really passed.
It's like really exclusive peek behind the curtains. Life as a podcaster.
We have a life, but our life is just talking off camera, basically.
Creating content and not utilizing it.
Oh my goodness. We can, yeah. Again, the TikTok thing that we said, it's the background buzzing, but it hasn't come into fruition.
Yes. So we did go to Melbourne last week and we set ourselves a very lofty goal. We said, okay, we're going to go to cafes. We might as well try and film stuff because it really doesn't look that hard. So how did you feel about that, Alice?
Well, yeah, so we were both looking at videos and specifically those ones where it's like, let me show you like this cafe in Melbourne or Sydney, wherever you are, or like one of those kind of mini vlog, I guess, type of TikToks. And we're looking at them like, oh, this is so easy. It's just like basically what we do. We just need to, you know, film it basically what we're doing.
Yeah.
Like walking to a cafe, filming the food. Maybe giving like a little review, that kind of thing. But actually it was way more harder than we thought because I think we were just like, it's fine. But then trying to get the shots to look aesthetic, I think that was really difficult from our perspective because we were like, well, we didn't think about anything. So once we did put in some effort, I think we got some good shots, but don't know, to be honest. It's hard to say now because there's no like product.
It was extremely awkward just trying to film in the middle of a cafe and like seeing people around you. And then even we try to do shots of like cake being eaten or like a drink being picked up. Turns out acting is hard.
Yeah, and I think because we're not familiar with the camera, so we don't like often film ourselves, I guess is kind of the thing. So it was a little bit awkward, even though we weren't showing our faces. It was just like, the angles, I think film isn't a medium that we haven't explored yet until that time. So, yeah, it'll take some getting used to. So maybe it will become easy and then we'll be like, TikTok is so easy.
If you compare the shots, I mean, I don't know that like someone picking up a coffee could look awkward. But we got there in the end, I think towards like the third or fourth cafe, it's like, all right, it's looking okay.
Yeah,
we
found some shots that I think look nice for the format that we kind of were envisaging. Yeah, because by all means, the cafe is already giving us all the materials already. Like everything already looked aesthetic. All we had to do was make it like, you know, give it justice, I guess.
Yes.
But that was something that we explored. Not the TikTok dance. We haven't gotten to that yet.
No. We're starting off baby steps. We can't even edit our video yet because our computers are both too old.
Yes, that might say something about us. A reflection.
Anyway. We'll keep on trying. We'll persevere.
We're trying really hard. I guess the other thing is we keep talking about Euphoria. I think we were kind of like, we're going to just recap it at the end and then we end up talking about it in depth. I think each episode, there's just so much content like going into it. So it's like, it's hard not to like discuss it.
Mm-mm, but that's true.
The season finale just aired. I think it was maybe last week, the week before now. But what a finale. Okay, let's annually do the recap of the season. What were your thoughts of those last two episodes we haven't covered, but also like in general, how do you think, because we know that the season 3 has been announced, how do you think it will kind of like project into that season 3?
So the last two, majority of them are taken up by Lexi's play. So throughout the whole season, we've been getting hints of her developing a play. You know, she's writing it, she's casting actors from the school, and you never really know what she's actually going to do. But it turns out to be a play based on all her friends showing their deepest, darkest secrets to the whole auditorium of high schoolers and parents for some reason. And yeah, most of the episode is just taken up exploring those two plays, seeing it come to life on stage and then interspersed with like other characters' little stories, mostly I think Fez and Ash, who are dealing with like the consequences of killing a drug dealer, and then Nate and his father dealing with the consequences of his dad being like a repressed sex predator.
I mean, yes, I guess that's the essence of his character, really.
So I think the play itself was cool. It was, I mean, 100% not a play you would see in any high school, not even a private high school, because the budget was some, I don't know, Christopher Nolan shit. Like he had like access to the best resources. The rest of the school is eating nothing for lunch. Like the lights are off, the toilets aren't flushing. There's no toilet paper because Lexi used the whole budget on this goddamn play.
The play looks really good. It's very interesting because, as you said, it's a reflection of their actual life story, like seen through Lexi's eyes. And I think that's really important because she's sort of seen as a side character. We have a lot of emphasis on Cassie this season. We saw Lexi kind of coming more to the forefront at the beginning as well, but not ever, she was never really like the main character. Mm. And in season one, it was very much about Rue, Jules, and I guess Maddie, really. Like those are the kind of characters that were coming out as pretty strong because they have like more stronger personalities. So it was good to see it from Lexi's eyes, which is kind of like from our point of view, where kind of like the audience becomes like the bystander in all this drama that's happening. And I think one of the iconic lines is Maddie going to, what's her name? Name Kat? Make that
Cat, yes, yeah, Cat.
Cat. And saying, wait, is this fucking play about us? The amount of times I've heard that audio on TikTok.
Is this fucking play about us?
Yeah, which is like, it's so funny because it's so like tongue-in-cheek. Yeah, so it was good to see. I think we can almost see some of the characters being like parodied. So like the character of Nate in that locker room scene. And then of course he was very uncomfortable with that because he himself holds repressed feelings. You know,
That was homophobic, Alice.
But yeah, just all these things kind of come out from all these characters that we know their story of, just being confronted with their own story. The only person who enjoyed it was, I think, Rue. I think Jules kind of enjoyed it too, from a spec, but Rue loved it.
I think Maddie liked it.
Maddie liked it, but because it made Cassie look bad. To be honest.
Lexi, you're a fucking G. And it made Nate look bad. So I think based on those two things.
And Cassie was, I think it wasn't meant to make her look bad, but I think because she's so insecure, seeing those things, and she sort of projected that I made her look bad, but I don't think. She hadn't seen the ending, which is what I'm saying. I think in the end, it would justify her action. But it's hard to make Cassie look good, maybe, because it's seen through Lexi's eyes, who she idolizes Cassie, but obviously Cassie has not treated her the best, maybe.
I think Cassie, by the end of the season, has gone full evil, full crazy mode. So she fully commits to Nate. She, after being confronted by Maddie, just like fully commits that she has done nothing wrong. So she does not want to admit any fault. She, you know, says stuff like, they weren't even boyfriend and girlfriend. Like she just, you know, tries to push everything off, and then in the end moves in with Nate and like is like, okay, well, I'm just going to be his girlfriend. I don't care about my friends. I don't care about my family. I don't care about my reputation as long as I have him. And then in the end, she even loses Nate because he gets mad about the play and mad at her by association with her sister. And at the end, she has nothing and she's getting her head punched through the wall by Maddie, which was pretty funny.
I think Cassie in like the last few scenes is genuinely pretty funny. So like that scene where she's breathing, deep breathing into the glass door, like she's heavy breathing and there's fog and she's got those crazy eyes on. Freaking loved it. It was so funny. I'm like, she is like gone. Like
she's lost her mind.
She cannot be saved at this moment. She will not be listening to anyone's reason, or she doesn't have any restraints basically at this point.
She's like lost everything she cares about, which is Nate. So, which is why Cassie goes nuts, climbs up on stage and basically assaults Lexi, just runs around screaming, makes a fool of herself in front of the whole school.
And then everyone's like, is this part of the play? It's like, is this where like they break the fourth wall and the real people go into the stage and act as themselves? Like,
is this art?
Yeah. It was actually quite funny.
A genius.
I think also telling, like in the play, it does kind of explain why Cassie is the way she is, or it does give a little bit more reason into it, just like the absence of their father figure, mm-hmm. I guess, and then wanting that like fatherly love and how that has affected them both. Mm. But they have dealt with it in their own specific ways. So Lexi is like afraid to love, but Cassie is just so desperate to love that she'll like do anything. And we see that with Nate. She's at her like lowest and she's like, I'll do anything for you. Like she changes how she looks, how she dresses. Mm-hmm. She's completely like subservient to like whatever his desires are. So it's just like that. So we get to see a little bit more of like Cassie from an outside point of view, but like she's just lost it at the end. And it's funny, but it's also really sad. And yes, the showdown between Maddie and Cassie kind of finally happens. So Addie chases Cassie
onto the stage and then out to the bathroom, basically.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. It gets violent. She promised violence last time and she went there.
I want to say, though, I feel like it wasn't violent enough.
Because I think what we've seen of Maddie is that she can get extremely violent, yes.
She can get like pretty, you know, upset and violent and emotional. I don't think she would, I don't know, maybe she was holding back because it was Cassie.
Mm, her best friend.
As much as she hates her, like can't bring herself to like, you know, hurt her too much, because at the end of the day, like she still loves her even though she's hurt Maddie a lot. So I wonder if it's that. But we get the bathroom scene that we kind of, you know, mirrors that first episode where she's just like, you know, come out, like, so it's like, okay, poor Maddie. I think end of season two, I feel really bad for Maddie and I want her to like, I want her to find happiness because she's really struggling. We see that. Like, she's such a strong character and she's definitely put on this facade. And we see in like episode season one and season two, we see that like slowly breaking down over time, because it's just not, what's the word? It's not feasible to do that all the time because there's some really bad things happening.
Well, yeah, actually, like on the topic of Maddie, she has that really horrific experience with Nate. So Maddie has the tape,
oh my God. Yeah.
Which shows Nate's dad, Cal, I think, yeah, having that sexual interaction with Jules, which is shows statutory rape, essentially. So she has that tape, she has that evidence, and Nate goes around to her place wanting to get it back. And he basically assaults her with a gun, threatens to kill her, and then plays like a game of Russian roulette, I guess, to scare her into giving the tape back. And it's like an extremely horrific scene. She's terrified, traumatized. And at the end, when she's like sobbing and crying, and Nate's like, hey, man, I was just playing with you. It's a joke. And she's like, what the fuck? Get away from me. And she's really like broken by this terrible experience.
Yeah, because this is, I mean, this is after Cassie betrayed her. So she like has like lost that friendship and that trust. And in addition, Nate is this horrible presence who becomes even more horrible in that moment. Mm. I was genuinely like shook by that scene. I was like, oh my God, this is so scary. Like I could just feel the emotion that Maddie was feeling. And I was like, oh my God, like this is a little bit too much. Like it felt too real, I think. Yeah, the way that it was done, it was just like so tense. It was hard to watch, to be honest, because it was just like very, very terrifying. Mm. Yeah, I think there were a lot of tense moments like in between like the play happening, which is very funny and comedic, and kind of like that juxtaposition with also Fez and him and Ash dealing with, I forget his name, but basically their friend has basically ratted them out to the police and is working with them. And so he has on his phone, he's like trying to record them, trying to get them to confess to the murder of Mouse, which is that drug dealer. Everything's a bit tense in that household. Fess is like having a good time. He's about to go to Lexi's concert, which is so cute. Like he's put on his tux, he's got like flowers. But of course, Fess doesn't get this happy ending, right? He doesn't get to go to that play, which we find out in the last episode. The shit goes down basically at his house. Ash, I think, understands that there's something fishy going on, but he doesn't understand the extent of it. And then he goes for the kill on that informant friend. And then obviously police are going to come. So there's like literally a shootout.
Yeah, like house. A SWAT team comes
in. Oh my goodness. And, yeah. I was just like, holy moly. Because like, you know, Ash is like, he's like Fez's right hand side. Or what do you call it? Right hand side?
Right hand man. Right hand boy. He's a little kid.
And you find that actually like they're not blood related, but they're very, like, there's very much a brotherly bond there. Mm. And he's so little, like, he's hardcore, like,
he has face tattoos.
Yeah, he has face tattoos. He'll deal out the punishment with what needs to do, whatever he needs to do. He's super loyal to Fez, but he is a little kid. So just, yeah, like, seeing him with, like, these guns and shooting, it's very alarming, I have to say. Like, watching it, I was like, this is, like, a lot, to be honest. Mm. Like, it was just, there's a lot happening, and it's very, like, confronting images as well.
So what did you think overall of the season? Did you like it more or less same as season one?
I think it's different. I kind of don't mind the direction. I think I was skeptical at the beginning as to what would happen, but once we got more root, I was like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
I really liked the play. Like, I feel like those were some of my favorite moments. I think the ending, though, I feel like I would have wanted more.
Yeah.
Felt very unfinished. I think they already knew there was a season three coming. That's why they left it like that. So I'm like, this doesn't feel like the end.
Yeah.
I know, like, oh, like that end scene, which is the Fez household shootout. Like, I get why that's the end. But, like, leading up to that, I'm like, I think they could have been more. Maybe the pacing of it doesn't help maybe with that story. Yeah, I just wanted more. And then the Maddie-Cassie showdown, wanted more, to be honest. I still enjoyed it. And it was some really good moments and really good television. I felt like maybe the beginning kind of let season down because it was just so much emphasis and there wasn't, like, movement in the story. It was just, right, like, a lot of Cassie and Nate being together. And it's like, you get it, they're together.
I'm sick of it.
Yeah, I'm sick of it. No more Nate. But yeah, how did you feel?
Yeah, I think it's a season that had really good standout moments. So I think the play is just, like, done on such a large scale. And it's really creative and the way they sort of mix between scenes that happen in real life, but then maybe it's actually just something that's happening on the play, and, like, jumping in between those two was really interesting. And I think that episode we've talked about previously where Rue is exposed for relapsing on drugs and having that confrontation with her mom, like, that was, like, such a good episode as well. But I think overall the storytelling and maybe the plotting felt a bit messier to me compared to season one. And I feel probably similar to you in that. I felt like the ending wasn't wrapped up as nicely and there were so many loose threads and some characters to me felt sidelined. So mainly, like, Kat, I guess, and a little bit of Jules as well. And then we had to watch Elliot sing a song, like the whole song in the last episode. I was like, is he really singing everything? Like, I thought this.
Yeah. Didn't we just sing the chorus? Like, come on.
Yeah.
And then he was like, it's not finished.
I'm like, what part of it is it? Well, you don't have to do anything else. Like, just, like, just leave off. Yeah. But to me, some of the things that I've heard about filming this season kind of help explain to me why I feel it that way. So one thing that and some of these are, like, corroborated by actual, like, cast members. They've talked about it, so maybe a bit more trustworthy. And some of it are just more, like, stories that have come from the set, so maybe question mark there. But overall, it seems to have a similar thread where Sam Levinson had written the story and then during COVID he rewrote everything. So then I feel like that's one of those things where when you've created something but you can't stop editing it and then sometimes it becomes a bit unwieldy.
Classic overthinker.
Overthinking, yeah. And then the other thing is compared to season one, where he had other directors come on board for just a couple of episodes. For season two, it was all just Sam and Sam. Writing and directing was all him, which I feel like can be a bit like a single vision when it comes to that, when you only have one person involved. And the other thing I've heard is that some episodes took ages to film. The New Year's party sequence itself took one whole week to film.
My God.
Yeah. And then apparently, based on the information that's come from the set, from both actors and, like, background actors, is that he would frequently change things up on the day of. So while, you know, filming, they'd be like, oh, no, we have to change this part of the script. And while filming, he wouldn't really have shot lists. He'll be like, yeah, well, why don't we just, like, try film it from here and then kind of make it up as it was going along for some sections, which I think explains why it took so long. And I feel like it could explain why overall, with the fact that he wrote it all over again, like he did it by himself, that maybe it's not as tight as the first season was. Because I think the first season, each episode was based on a single character. And I think that helped.
Yeah, with the flow.
Yeah, with the flow and everything. Yeah, whereas it felt a bit messier, like there are a lot of loose threads here. Yeah, for season two. Not that I didn't enjoy it, like good vibes, good visuals, very creative, great acting, and like really standout episodes, but I don't think it felt as tight as season one.
Yeah, like it definitely enjoyed it for sure. There were some really, really good moments. that we like both really enjoyed.
Totally.
Yeah, it does. Like now that you say that new sequence took 1 week to film, it does explain a lot. And it probably does explain why we have like that full episode and we're lingering on moments that maybe aren't necessary to the whole plot line. Because I think when you first watch that season one, you're like, oh, this is just going to be this for the whole season, kind of, because you're like, this dynamic is very well established. But then we like suddenly move into like the Rue story, which is good. That's a good story, but it does feel like kind of disjointed a little bit in the whole scheme of the season. Yeah, and I think that's probably where like getting the director's input would have helped, maybe. So like have him step back a little bit from his own work, because sometimes you can't see
exactly when you're too familiar. Yeah. And if you've written something and rewrote it, I feel like you become too into it that you can't take a step back and like look at, actually, that doesn't make sense, this doesn't track, because you feel like it does because you're so into it and you're so familiar with the work.
And like that world that you've written, so you're like, oh, this is definitely important, but it's really hard to edit your work, basically.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. So, I mean, that all makes sense, because there was a big time gap in between season one and season two. So maybe that has kind of played a factor in it as well. Mm-hmm. So I think for season three, we'll probably be in a tighter schedule, like a normal schedule, now that like filming can go back to normal. So maybe that's going to allow for more succinct season. Hopefully. I mean, there are a lot of things that we can go up from here. So like definitely he's set like that foundation for a good season three. There's plenty we can go on. At the end of the last episode as well, you see Rue kind of do like a voiceover, and she does say that she stays clean for the rest of the year. So that's something like that's positive in her direction of the story. It'd be interesting now, what does her story become then? Because I think season one, season two has really concentrated on her, her journey be rehabilitated / relapsing. Once we take that away, what does her journey become now?
That's the whole Laurie storyline. So we have that drug dealer woman. Rue owes her $10,000, and we haven't seen the end to that yet.
Is it just her going back to the drugs, but like monetary wise, trying to outrun the drug dealers or something? The thing is, she's not, her relationship with Jules is still a bit broken. Like she's not mad anymore. She like feels okay with it. She's kind of come at peace, but she's also not really like warming up to her and talking to her.
And then we also have seen less of Kat. Basically, her storyline this season was she wasn't really happy in a relationship with Ethan. She didn't feel fulfilled, like physically, I guess, in that relationship as well. And then they break up in a really weird scene, which felt out of character for her, where she's like, I have a terminal illness and that's why we're breaking up. And then when he goes, you're making that up, she's like, you're gaslighting me. And that's basically her story.
And that's it. And then the rest of the season, she kind of just plays Maddie's best friend.
Yeah, she's like, don't do that, Maddie. No, stop, Maddie. She's just playing the little side character.
And she just kind of like is just helping Maddie. So I'd love to see more of her, but as we discussed, she had beef with the director. So that's probably why they took away those scenes. But that's kind of, it's a missed opportunity. I hope they can look past that and go into a working relationship.
Be professionals.
Be professional. And then Nate, oh my gosh, end of the season, Nate, he finally did something good. He finally grew up for, 5 minutes only, but he did it. He turned his dad in, which I can only imagine would be like the most difficult thing to do, but he did it. He brought a gun just in case, I guess. But he confronted his father, and then, the cops came and took him away. So I'd love to see him in season three be in jail. What I want to see.
I just want to see him in a jail.
Yes, I want to see him in a jail cell for the crimes that he's committed.
Yes.
So I see that for Cal.
Just sitting in jail.
I just want them to like visit him one day and be like, you're in jail. And then
they never like, see him again.
Yeah. But maybe I don't know how they'll deal with that in the next season, whether they will go through the whole trial thing or they'll just be like, he's in jail and then that's it. Because that could be interesting too, having like that whole trial and the impact of the family. But that's to be honest, his mom is like, the mom is just kind of like drunk and whatever now. Like she's just
the mom is like as bad as, she's also a bad parent.
She is not a great parent. And I think there's just a lot of like anger and resentment in that marriage that just like fostered for years and years and years. So,
and produced very unhappy children.
I can see why they grew up that way. at least she's not doing anything bad. She's just drinking herself to sleep every day. I mean, that's good, but at least she's not, you know, raping little... No, sorry, can I say that word?
What if I don't ban us?
Okay, fine. So at least she's not doing anything illegal.
Yeah. I would love to see Cal in jail and Nate in therapy.
Oh my goodness, he needs so much therapy. I doubt he would go, but...
He doesn't believe in it.
Yeah, and then Cassie. I don't know.
Away from Nate,
but also what in now? What now? Like, the only people who will stand by her are her family. Her mum, probably. Her mum just seems like a nice person.
So overall, do you think, in your point of view, is it okay what Lexi did with the play?
I think she should have told them beforehand. I honestly think so. Because she did is in her right, her creative freedom to do so. She changed her names. It's what people, like, heaps of people do this, right? Like they write stories based on their experiences. This is Lexi's experience. It's fair enough. But she should definitely have told them because it becomes a little bit Gossip Girl, right?
Okay. So the girl that was playing Cass had this part on stage where she was riding a merry-go-round and like gyrating on the horse.
Yeah.
And it's just like, Lexi, come on. Did you have to show that? That's purely like embarrassment, isn't it? Or humiliation.
And it's a scene that I think Cassie really resents herself. Mm. She's embarrassed by it. She never wanted to do it. She just, I guess, felt like she had to because that was what was expected. Not like that particular way, but that image of her. So yeah, I feel like maybe some things could have been taken back. And like, I think her reason for not telling everyone was to not suppress that creativity and those real experiences. But I think out of respect, it's like, well, maybe you should have at least given them a heads up.
Yeah, maybe.
Just, you know, if you truly like, these are people you care about.
Yeah.
And she says like, these are her best friends and stuff. So like, you know, should have. Yeah. I think some of it wasn't too bad. And I think maybe there was some overreaction from Cassie in some ways because of said issues. Yeah, overall, it's a really good play.
It was definitely, she has a bright future ahead of her if she wants to go into.
Yes, definitely. Theater. Definitely. Yeah. And that play was like funny. It was insightful. And I think there was really interesting like stages as well that were set up.
I saw everyone on the internet losing their mind over, you know, when she's like walking across the lockers and the stage is turning, like Lazy Susan on stage, I guess.
Mm.
And everyone's like, that costs so much. And the idea that a high school play could afford to have that is like insane.
Look, this isn't a normal high school. This is Euphoria High.
You got that right.
Yeah.
Despite everything, we're still keen for season 3. We'll definitely be checking it out when it arrives next year in 2023.
Oh my goodness, so excited.
And yeah, what's something else that we want to talk about, Alice, that we've checked out recently?
No. Batman. Pow.
Man. So not just Batman, but the Batman.
The Batman with Rob Pattinson.
Our beloved Edward.
Yeah, the Edward Cullen. Cedric Diggory in a mask doing what he does best, cheers,
doing gloom. Being an emo sad boy,
yeah,
looking pained and tortured,
staring into the camera for lingering shots.
Edward walked so the Batman could run.
So I guess to again reference our previous episode of movies that we would want to watch in 2022, we ticked another one off the wish list, which was Batman. We had, I guess, hypotheses of what Pattinson would be like as the Batman. What did you think coming out of it? Like, did you think he fulfilled the prophecy?
He 100% did. He was moody. He was sad. He was emo. He was daring. He was longing. He was pained. He was tortured. I was like, you did it all.
It's funny too because, yeah, we were joking about like the Edward reference. It's like, you know, he's been training his whole life to basically, or his whole acting career basically is based on these like characters that are like just kind of like quiet, tortured, sad boys. And then who else to play? It honestly does make sense that he chose Batman as like a role to play because Batman is one of like the gloomiest, saddest boys.
He's sadder than Bruce Wayne.
Like, seriously, out of all the superheroes, Bruce Wayne is up there, right? I mean, he literally lives in, like, Gotham, which is, like,
sad. Yeah.
Like, the saddest town. It's, like, grey and raining all the time. It's really dark, as we found out when we watched the movie. It was just very, very dark.
It's very dark. There's so much poverty and crime. Everyone's sad. And then his parents died, and he's sad because he's an orphan. It's all sad.
Just crying in his tower, right?
I mean, yeah.
His dollar bills.
Wiping his tears with his money.
But overall, I think this movie was really fun. I think I had expectations for Robert Pattinson, the actual actor. So I knew what to expect from him, and I was sure I was going to enjoy his performance. But I think the movie in general, I did actually enjoy it. Nothing new, I guess, in terms of like the Batman atmosphere, because we've seen so many iterations of it. We're all familiar with the story. It's kind of up to the actor and the director to kind of take it in their own direction almost.
Mm. Yeah, totally.
Rather than storyline, because storyline, like, how many times can you say that a boy has been, like, you know, like, there's only so many different ways we can do this, to be honest, because they're very much bound by that origin story. Like, well, you can't put it in a new city or something, you know.
Yeah, like, of course. I mean, 10 points to this movie for not showing us the death of Martha and Thomas Wayne again, because we've seen that over and over. And I think they understand. We don't need to see that. Like, we all know.
100%. Like,
everyone knows what happened. We know why he became Batman.
Yes, exactly. I did enjoy that in the beginning, kind of went straight to it. Like, he was just Batman. Well, sorry, I'm Vengeance. That's a spoiler.
I'm Vengeance.
So I love that, like, they actually just went straight to it, and then we're like, this is Batman, and we're like, yeah, this is what we came for. Yeah, we know exactly all the stuff that we've talked about before. We know why he's there. We know that he's rich. No need to explain all of that. I love the character development as well, just to skip ahead. I love that he was a self-aware Batman. I love that for him.
It was like, I know I'm sad. I know I'm tortured.
And you know what? I'm going to do absolutely nothing about it. I love that for him.
I know I'm just like emotionally stunted, but it's okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, I really enjoyed it too. I mean, aside from the whole Rob Pattinson thing, I feel like we're always going to like it just purely based on that.
If anything, it would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just to watch him. Oh, and I liked little bits like how he's wearing makeup. And then during the day when it's like really bright outside, he like wears sunglasses because... Yeah. He's Vengeance. It's because he's so used to the dark.
Well, it's because he hasn't slept as well. Like, probably just...
I liked his costume. I think he looked great in it. The storyline was pretty interesting. I think it was like a fun new iteration of Batman that's a bit different to the ones we've seen on screen before. But going back to more of his detective roots, because I guess in the comics, like, originally, his superpower is that he's like a really good detective. Like, you know, he's not Superman. He can't fly or anything, but he's just like really smart. So we got to see him face off the Riddler, and then whenever the Riddler sends him like little riddles and puzzles, Batman's just like, yeah, I got it. Like, I'm really smart. Like, I can figure it out. So that was fun to see. And I think it sort of lent more into some of like the older comics and maybe some of the older animated series where it's just very gothic and haunted, and he moves in the shadows and he's coming out silently and, you know, being all moody and atmospheric and actually being a detective and just following leads and like finding clues, which I thought was really fun, except the movie was too long.
Oh my god, the movie was so long. So I had anticipated 2 hours of my time and end up being close to 3. Which is fine. I just wish I had anticipated that before actually watching it, because I think halfway through I was like, I really need like caffeine, like, or sugar or something, because I'm like going to fall asleep. And it's not because the movie's bad, but it's because this cinema is dark. This movie is dark.
It just feels too cozy.
I've been sitting here for a while in this comfortable chair. So, you know, just purely based on that, I just needed I need something to like juice me up a little bit. And also I think the movie, and I think it's to its benefit, but also I guess in terms of like longevity and like just keeping yourself engaged, there are a lot of like lingering moments which I think are like nice to have, but you just feel like, I would have liked to have known that those were going to be there. I was just like, yeah, it's good. Like, it does engage you in that way, and it like definitely well shot scenes, but yes, it just does make for a long movie.
And I think the villain, like, aka the Riddler, was genuinely compelling and, like, scary. and he's like so creepy scary. Mind. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, it's actually quite scary.
Yeah.
And I think I did tell you this afterwards, but it reminded me a lot of like Zodiac and like those kind of detective stories, which are like super gritty, super like in your face, like grotesque and smart. That's the other thing. Just like solid fun. Like you just want to be like, what are they going to do next? Like you're kind of like not knowing. And I guess that's also from coming from my perspective where I'm not familiar with like this particular storyline. So I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? Like, what's the next clue going to be? It's all just like kind of a bit of fun as well. Mm. Interspersed with the lingering Batman looks.
Yeah, it was more like a crime thriller. Yeah. Version of Batman, different to like him being like having crazy number of like cool super weapons or like fighting monsters or aliens that we've seen in versions before. So he wasn't necessarily like the Nolan version who was that billionaire playboy persona. This guy was just like, as any man would, who dresses up as a bat and fights criminals at night, like mentally, like low-key unstable and like was really sad and like alienated himself from everyone else, pushed people away. And he was like that in his real life as well as like being Batman. Like he completely consumed him.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I think because of what you just said, it makes for a very realistic Batman in a way. And it's kind of funny as well because, yeah, like this Batman character and also Bruce Wayne, the character, are just so grounded in like real life emotions and human motives maybe. Like, you know, this guy is just really sad. So he is a recluse. Pushing people away. He doesn't really interact with other people because he doesn't feel like he needs to, I think.
Yeah.
And also, importantly for the Batman character, doesn't really identify as like bad or good, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But so it does feel like realistic the way that the character is being portrayed. He does dress up as a bat. So we get scenes where I'm like just like super into it and like he's just like, you know, helping the detective like with that particular crime scene and stuff. And then he's just wearing like this mask with the little ears. And I'm like, it looks so cute. It's like hard to like unsee it because you have to be like focused on the movie. But I'm like, oh, but he looks so good. Like, you know, his little ears, his little bat ears and his cape. Yeah. To your point as well, like the costume does look great. Like I'm not saying it doesn't look great. It looks very, very good. Like the mask is like perfectly molded to his face.
It looked great on his face. His chiseled jawline.
Honestly, that costume looked expensive. That is difficult to
material girl.
It's difficult to achieve in a movie where it's so dark. It's kind of hard to see textures and stuff, right?
Mm-mm.
So he's wearing like an all black costume in a very dark movie and it still looks like expensive. I'm like, that's an achievement. Like, you know, it's all about like the molding of like the bodice and then with the cape, like felt very silky and then that perfectly molded mask. Yeah, it looked really good.
Mm. Yeah. And we can't also miss out on talking about Miss Catwoman, Zoe Kravitz, who was also incredible. She rocked that suit. She was slinky. She was feline. She was femme fatale. And she was really entertaining to watch as well. And I think had chemistry with Batman.
Yes, a very modern Catwoman, I would say. In my head, I was like, yeah, I see why she would get that role. I think I was surprised at the casting at first, but honestly, she owned it. She has that effortlessness and sexiness that just is coming from herself, not necessarily Catwoman. Like, it's just like, she just fit into that role like so well. You know, like the fight scenes and stuff, she comes up as like a very tough woman, but she is kind of like the, yeah, as you said, the slinky kind of like mysterious woman who just has a lot of cats.
She had like four cats.
Yeah, she has a thing for strays. I thought that was quite flirty.
I was like, I'm getting these feelings.
Yeah. And then I think also with the romance, it wasn't like this is like true love or anything. I think the kisses that we get, I actually didn't mind them. I think they came at like moments as well. Like, you know, they're, you know, at the height of some action or something like that. And then they just kind of like kiss as like as a reaction to like the adrenaline and stuff like that, coupled along with, I guess, like the previous chemistry. So it actually felt like very natural. I really like that. Like dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like pure attraction. Like they were just drawn to each other and it worked.
Yeah.
It worked really well.
Yes. And again, her costuming as well was excellent. I have was eyeing her eye makeup. From
her makeup was so good. Yeah,
I was like, 100%. That's what I want to look like from now on.
Her eyeliner, her wings, so sharp.
But it was also, again, because the movie is so dark, we need to create like dimension. So they put like diamantes and like sparkly eyeshadow. So she, you know, her face was still like lighting up basically. In
her highlighter was beaming.
In a scene where like it's just all black, you can still see her and like see all her features like very prominently. I'm like, this is so clever. Like, this is very, like, this just looks so good. Like,
oh my God, costuming and makeup on this movie.
Loved it. Yeah. Absolutely loved it. It's very eye catching. But a long movie.
It's a very long movie. I don't think it had to be that long. I don't know. I feel like they could have shaved 30 minutes by being creative. But I think overall the story and this sort of approach to Batman I really enjoyed. Definitely keen. I think, you know, spoiler alert, I won't say it, but there is like a post-credit scene which suggests that perhaps a sequel is incoming.
Well, yes. I mean, they might as well.
What have they got to lose?
What have they got to lose? I think, on the movie length, yes, they could have definitely taken some off. But in a way, I don't mind that it is long. It feels like luxurious and more like character story. Mm. I think when we have a long feature film, yes, it was very long.
I think for me, okay, spoiler alert. I'm going to put spoiler markers here for people who haven't watched Batman. So 3, 2, 1, better be ready. For me personally, I think at the end when the Riddler is caught and they're at the police station and there's that tense sort of confrontation with Batman, I thought that sequence worked really well. And the fact that the Riddler reveals, oh, I thought I was working with you. I thought we were on the same side. And that sort of delusion is revealed and Batman gets to see his impact on the city may have been a bit less positive than he might have expected. Like, he wasn't just fighting crime, but potentially he was inciting more radical elements of the city. So that scene was like really compelling to me. And then the fact that we didn't just automatically jump to the flood scene in the stadium, I feel like because it was like crescendoing and going up and getting really exciting. I personally would have really liked it if, because of that conversation and because of seeds planted in the beginning of the movie, he realized, oh, fuck, you're doing this. And he ran to the stadium. But I think because he like had that conversation and then he like went back to the house and it was like really chill again. I thought it just sort of like
the change in pace,
it just kind of like came to a stop and then you kind of lost that momentum that was building because that that Riddler versus Batman scene, I think the conversation was really like intense and Paul Dano was doing a great job being like crazy Riddler.
Yeah, he always, again, typecasting, but he always plays like those nerdy characters. This is nerdy, but like make it crazy.
Nerdy, but make it violent.
Yeah, like I liked that performance a lot. I think strong performances from all the cast, actually. I would have liked to see more Alfred.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, I'm sure in the sequel there'll be more of him.
Yes, I think so.
I think also because like Alfred traditionally has played like a bigger role in those Batman movies, and whereas this one he kind of took a backseat. So maybe that's what took me by surprise.
Yeah. Also, did you notice next to you in the cinema there was like a really small child?
Yes, I think she was sleeping.
Okay, because I was like, I was like, this movie is probably not suitable for her. Like,
yeah. So I heard some sleeping noises next to me. So I was like, is that the mom? But I think it might have been the child.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure. Someone was sleeping. That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure who. I didn't bother to check. But someone was sleeping on the side. Yeah, it is a fairly violent movie. However, saying this because you're like older, but when you were a child, did you not watch violent movies?
I mean, I probably did. Yeah. But the thing is, her parents brought her in there. I don't think my parents would have brought me.
My parents would have like put it on the TV and then we would have been together. But like, I was definitely
I was watching stuff like Terminator and stuff.
Yeah, for sure, when you're a child. So like, I think it's just like that sort of thing. It's just that, your parents wouldn't have paid for it or wouldn't have paid more than $10 or something.
We were in a cinema with some hooligans as well.
Oh my God, the teenage boys, they come out to play. Honestly, I think it was like, I have to sometimes step back and be like, oh, they're just having fun. Like, they're only kids, little kids and stuff. But like, when they like say things in the middle of the movie, I'm like, shh. Like, you know, before the movie, after the movie, like, all right, go have your fun.
Run around.
Play along, little ones, but during movie, don't like make noises and stuff, please.
Please.
So, yeah.
from two older millennials begging. Let us watch our movies in peace.
Please, come on. This is like, we don't get to do this all the time. It's very select movies, okay?
Yeah. Please, our humble request.
Humble request to watch Batman in peace. Next time, I will bring a coffee. Yes.
For the sequel, we'll be caffeinating up.
Caffeinating up, yeah.
So next on the list, Alice, is, I mean, I don't know much about this. All you've told me is you watched a YouTube series. So I'm very curious. Tell me more.
I just want to recommend. Okay. I'm going to say this, but I'm going to explain it. Okay. Mm. So basically, it's a three-part YouTube series.
Mm.
Each part is about 2 hours long. It is a monster. However, these three parts cover the entire series of Pretty Little Liars.
I know exactly, you know, who you're talking about. He's all over my TikTok.
But have you watched these videos?
I haven't watched it. And the reason I didn't watch it, even though I'm curious, is I haven't seen Pretty Little Liars. So I felt like, would I not enjoy it as much?
Look, you watch these videos and you won't have to watch Pretty Little Liars.
I know it in the back of my head.
I watched the first season of Pretty Little Liars, but never continued watching it. I'm not sure why I did that, but it did make me kind of want to, like, just see for myself how these plot lines appear in real life, because some of them are, like, real, like, out there, like, absolutely bonkers. And I think that's, like, sort of the fun of it. So it's Mike's Mike. So MikeSMic. And he's actually Australian, which I love.
He's Australian. I've never heard his voice, I realize. Because I've only watched him, like, dance on TikTok and stuff.
Well, if he's not based in Australia, well, I'm so very sorry, but he does sound very Australian.
That's even better though if he is.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah. Melbourne, love it.
Oh, love it.
Yeah, so
basically one, I think, of us.
He is particularly a fan of the show, so I think his enthusiasm really comes out. And obviously, if he wasn't enthusiastic about it, he probably wouldn't have created 6 hour long of videos about the series in general. I think just fun to watch him talk about it. And I think also the way he describes some of the characters, so like Ezra, who is the teacher character, which is, this isn't really a spoiler because it comes, relationship with Arya is kind of set in the first episode of season one, but basically it's that teacher child.
I've heard about this.
So Ezra is like the teacher figure. He is a teacher, and he's has a relationship with Arya, a romantic relationship, by the way, with Arya, who finds out that she is a student in his class. And instead of being like, this is wrong, which I think initially they're like, this is wrong. And Arya's like, no, I want to, like, you know, have a relationship with you. And then he's like, oh, yeah, fine.
As any self-respecting adult teacher would do.
So Mike's Mike, he always, like, he despises that Ezra character for that reason, but also many other reasons. He keeps calling him Ezra Flop, and, like, every time he says that, like, I can't, like, take it seriously. So I think the way he explains the series is also just kind of like a friend, if a friend was to lecture you on Pretty Little Liars. So it feels, like, relatable, it's engaging, and this show is, like, the words that are coming out of his mouth, I think, is in particular, like, the interesting bit, because it's just, like, that in one series, like, it's a lot. And it's a lot of fun. So it may make you want to watch it, but it also may be enough to satisfy. I think the amazing thing is that it even happens. Because you haven't watched Pretty Little Liars, I'm going to cover some points for you that happen throughout. And this includes, but it's not, like, you know, limited to evil twins, murders, kidnapping. There's a particular scene I'm thinking about. I'm not gonna tell you it because you'll find out about it, but basically they get kidnapped and they put in, like, replica rooms. There's multiple A's. So a big plot point in the first season of Pretty Little Liars is that there's an A who's kind of, like, blackmailing them, threatening them, sending them, like, text messages and stuff like that. But there are multiple of them, multiple people, and also, like, disguises. So, like, I'm not talking about, like, she wore, like, a hat. Like, these are, like, people were, like, taking off, like, their faces. Like, it's absolutely, like anything you can think of,
it happens.
Have it. Yeah. Step brothers, step sisters, step cousins, adultery. adultery, blind people becoming not blind, people coming from the dead, like, and then, you know, we find out they're alive later on. Like, there's just everything and anything can happen, and I think that's part of the fun of it, that you, like, can't predict. Well, maybe you can. I don't know.
Like, pure chaos, I guess.
Yes.
Like, anything can happen. Like, nothing is off limits.
Yes. And I think that's, like, part of the fun, right?
Mm.
There's just so much happening that that story, it's not afraid to, like, veer off course, I guess. It's not trying to be serious here. It's just very much like, let's just do what we got to do. And they do it.
Mm. Okay. How interesting.
It is. I think I was listening to it, I was like, oh my god, this is like actually wild. Like,
yeah,
the fact that this was on television, like, not to age us, but it was like back in the day of when shows would come out on telly week by week.
Classic. Yeah.
So yeah, just imagine. I think it would have been fun in that format, where you have like cliffhanger after cliffhanger after cliffhanger. I think that that's the kind of thing that like will keep audiences in, right? But yeah.
This launched the careers of a couple of people like Lucy Hale, Ashley Benson.
Shay Mitchell?
Shay Mitchell, yes. That's the one. Yeah. And this was based on a book.
Yes, but I think it does veer off that book after season two or three. I can't remember if that's on my head, but it does end up deviating from that original source. And I think that's where things get especially messy, because they don't have to stick to anything. They can just literally, I'm sure the writers were in the background having a lot of fun being like, what else can we do to this character this week? Like, I'm sure it would have been so fun to just like make up stuff in the back end and be like, and then trying to also like piece things together, because I think although there's like heaps of things happening from different characters and different side plots and everything, the whole thing is that there is like a central side plot as well, which is that A character that's kind of like combining all these experiences together. So I think there's a lot of fun in like trying to like figure out the puzzle, basically who is A, like that mystery.
So HBO has commissioned another series in the Pretty Little Lies franchise. Will you be checking that out?
Maybe I'll watch the recap.
From Mike's mic.
Yeah, from Mike's mic. To save me time. I just like, can you fathom watching 7 seasons of 1 hour long episodes? So I think there's 160. Can you fathom in your busy, busy schedule watching... You'd have to have a good chunk of time.
But this HBO one, so it's going to be 10 episodes. It's got the Riverdale creator as their showrunner.
Thing.
And it's based on new characters and a new storyline and a new setting, but within the same universe as the previous Pretty Little Liars show.
It looks like it's kind of following on from some characters that we have been introduced to in that universe in that original series. So I think it like does hint towards this. And then I guess I finally got picked up. I don't know, to be honest. I think I'm like, I'm good.
You're
in a way, I'm like, I'm good.
Well, at least Mike's mic will have more things to do.
Yeah. I think it's just entertaining to like watch him like talk about it and be like, because it's clearly like he enjoyed the content. I think that really comes through. Like when people talk about things that they like, amazingly, it's like.
Is that a little self-dig?
Feel like the passion.
I'm looking at an article and like there's a picture of teens and one of them is pregnant, so I clearly already see drama happening.
So much drama. Oh my goodness.
This story will follow an entirely new generation of little liars. That's what it says. A brand new set of little liars find themselves tormented by an unknown assailant with a capital A and made to pay for the secret sin their parents committed 2 decades ago, as well as their own.
Interesting.
The series has been described as a darker, modern, and horror-tinged. So okay. It's like, yeah, more vibes from Chilling Adventures of Sabrina Riverdale.
Very similar vibes, I guess, to Pretty Little Liars, but just making it like more like modern. And I guess we're continuing the story of an A sort of character, whether it's called A in this series, but to seem like that kind of person, like someone is tormenting them and then they can't like tell the police.
Yeah.
It's always been like my gripe with them series. Like
just tell the police.
literally, this is so beyond you. Like, everything that's happening, I'm sure there's grounds here for you to be, like, protected a little bit, because you're literally getting, like, blackmailed. People are getting murdered. Like,
you're a child.
Yeah. Like, just because you did something bad once, it was really not as bad as what's happening to you.
Yes, I think you've told me that before. Like, yeah. One of the, yeah, you're watching Pretty Little Lies and like shows like that. You're like, just go to the police. Like,
like literally, this is go. Yeah. Like, there is absolutely nothing you can do.
You're to, in like, high school.
Like, good on you for being brave, but like, know your place. Like,
know your limits, please.
Know your limits. Mm. Exactly. But without that, you wouldn't have 7 seasons of it. So. Thank God they didn't get it from
me. That's like the woman in the street across the house, whatever, as well, where she's just like, it's up to me. I got to do this.
There's no one else in this whole town that could possibly do this job.
If I don't do it, who will? I've seen on his TikToks a lot of comments asking him to do a recap of Glee.
Ooh, that would be interesting, yes. Especially in the 2022 world. I know in some of his content, like, so he did, this is his, like, first long-form content on YouTube, but I think he does, like, a lot of, like, pop culture stuff, yeah, about, like, TV shows, also, like, history of pop culture, like, events and things like that, so more, like, think pieces or commentary, maybe, on particular moments. I think this is his first full recap, though, of a series, and chose this one because he's a fan, obviously.
Yeah, okay. Oh my god, we should collab with him, our fellow
I feel like we're content the same, creator. Yeah, we're like the same atmosphere of pop culture, right? Like,
yeah, we're definitely on the same level as his 272,000 followers on TikTok. Yeah.
On YouTube he has 650,000.
Yeah, definitely the same level. We got reposted by Genki.
Love that for us.
Totally comparable. Okay, I will check it out. Yeah,
I think he's a K-pop fan. I think
he loves Stacy. Yes, I haven't watched his YouTube videos, but yeah, I totally interact with him through his TikToks, and he's a big Stacy fan. And based on that, I respect him a lot because their songs are bangers.
He makes a few references to K-pop throughout his videos.
I think he likes Twice as well. So
I think he's just aware of the whole world. As we are very much aware
of. His mind is so powerful.
I think we're on the same side of the internet, is what I'm saying.
I wonder how old he is. You think he's Gen Z or?
I think he might be a millennial.
Oh my God. Mike. Imagine we bump. He was born 1995. Oh.
That's a millennial, isn't it?
One of us.
Yeah. I think the fact that did he mention like Tumblr or something?
Yes.
I think he mentioned Tumblr and like being on the Pretty Little Lies side of Tumblr. I'm like, that is such a teenage / like high school / like end of primary school thing to have done. Yeah. So, and that made me feel like we were in the same sort of gen, I think. So the fact that I think he, watched Pretty Little Lies as it was that time period, I think also kind of made me feel like, I think, kind of.
Also Glee.
And Glee. I would love to, because I'm not familiar with those later seasons. I think I would love to hear about it because I just hear so much about it. I'm like, I just want to know what happens, but I don't actually want to watch it.
Yeah, I'm the same because the later seasons we definitely dropped off. Mm. So I don't even know how the story like ends because I know Corey Monteith's character like kind of went back and maybe was a teacher at the school or I don't know, stuff like that, which I'm totally unaware of.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I have no idea. It'll be interesting to hear that tape. The storyline will definitely not be as convoluted as Pretty Little Lies. So he does like a little diagram, I guess, on the wall, and there are like lines going everywhere. It looks very impressive by the end. There's just like connections to everything. And then I think he also does a breakdown of the family structure. Yeah. So it's like this person is this person's half sister, but also their cousin, and like things like that.
Classic.
There's just so much going on in this little town. I think a lot of fun, even if to have them like at the background. That's kind of what I did. And in like, you know, you kind of like be listening to it like in the background, and you kind of like, what the hell? Like, surely not. But yes, if you wanted to commit yourself to this content, I would say it's definitely worth a listen.
I feel like one of the longest YouTube videos I've ever watched is like during the whole Tati James Charles scandal.
The goodbye sister video. Oh my goodness.
I was like, let me sit down. Let me watch this whole goddamn thing.
And you know, I watched that video and I was overseas in China.
Just being like, I need to like put everything on hold.
I was literally like, what's happening? I gotta know.
She's saying goodbye.
Yeah, because I think at this, I mean, this is sidetracking, I guess, but, you know, James Charles and Tati were like prominent YouTubers at this period of time. They were huge. So this was huge, like revelation, drama.
It was a scandal.
Oh my goodness. It was a lot. Yeah. And then after that, I never heard of James Charles ever again.
And even Tati as well, to be honest. Like she's still around, but she's not around.
I still subscribe to her, so I see her videos. I don't necessarily watch them, but she did go on hiatus for a bit. Understandably, she had a hard year. James Charles, I don't think I ever subscribed to him, so I don't really see, but I'm sure he still gets millions of views for every video, which I think was something that we predicted at that time, like he'll be fine. Yes, he lost 9 million, but he had like 19, so it's like, well, I think he'll be right.
Yeah. I think he gets made fun of on TikTok now.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those videos.
Yeah. Ones when he's singing?
Yes. They're like, imagine paying, you know,
yes,
money.
I know exactly what you're thinking.
Yeah, like imagine paying money to see like James Charles and then he gives you a performance. Like you did not pay to watch him sing. Let's be real.
Imagine asking your mom to buy you tickets to this.
And yeah, like
this is what you got.
Interesting money spent.
Oh, I love YouTube drama.
There's so much YouTube drama. I'm not even up to date with all the stuff, but I've definitely heard of things happening.
Mm.
I'm just like not with it.
Not with it anymore.
I'm not with it anymore. That's fine.
It's okay. YouTube sort of like dropped down. It's all about the TikTokies.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there's TikTok drama, but I don't know. I'm not on that side.
Apparently Charlie D'Amelio broke up with, I don't know. I'm sure there's stuff like that.
God, I don't even know that.
Hype House or whatever.
Oh, the,
Addison Rae.
Was that their TV show, The Hype House with, I didn't know because I only recognized
Nikita
one person.
Nikita Dragon.
Yeah, that was the only person I recognized. And I was like.
The oldest person.
Yeah. Yikes. But I was like, I don't think this is a show I would enjoy.
No, I just didn't.
In addition to not knowing who these people are.
Mm. Well, thank you for the recommendation and the detailed description. It seems like this is a way for me to watch Pretty Little Lies without actually watching it.
Look, you could, I'll put it this way, you can either watch this 6-hour content or you can watch 160 hours of Pretty Little Lies and experience it for yourself. Like, I don't know, maybe you want to do both. Maybe you'll find that you have saved yourself 160 hours. I'm not sure.
Probably.
Probably, to be honest. I feel like, yeah. It does make me think of Pretty Little Liars like a little bit better than I did before.
Maybe there's like different sort of value in it, just in its sheer absurd.
Yes,
nature.
I think so. Yeah. I think if you were to come into it being like, this is going to be like bonkers, then yes, I think it'd be very much enjoyable.
Mm-mm.
Guilty pleasure viewing for you. And then I guess we move on to the movie that we said we would watch. I kept forgetting the name of this movie. So many times I was like, I think I was early in the week. I went to sit down and watch this movie. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch this movie. And I went to watch the movie and I was like, what is the movie called?
I think we also were like, let's watch this movie because we had an opportunity to watch it together on the weekend. But we're like, we're just going to watch 2521 instead.
You know what? I have absolutely no regrets about that.
I think we made the right decision there.
So, I Want You Back. I had to Google Jenny Slater. Jenny Slate, sorry.
Mona Lisa Sapstein.
Yeah, because I was like, I remember she was in this movie, but I forget what the movie is called. Anyway, it's called I Want You Back. And also it stars Charlie Day, who some people know from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is a comedy. So, both two comedians playing the main roles in a rom-com. Love that already. You know that's going to bring the comedy. Well, you hope. So basically these are two people and they are recently broken up with. We find out quite early on in the movie. And then it's basically them coming together and having that shared experience of having recently had their heart broken. And then I guess relying on each other for that emotional support. And then I guess they form a friendship and they try to, like, they basically make up schemes to get their exes back, basically. Yes. And is kind of the crux of the movie.
Yeah. Charlie Day's character becomes friends with Jenny Slate's ex. And the whole plan there is to convince him to break up with his new girlfriend and go back to Jenny Slate. And then Jenny Slate starts getting closer to Charlie Day's ex-girlfriend's new partner. And then tries to cause a rift in that relationship. And the goal is to just get the original partners back. But I guess, as that sounds, that's an insane plan. And it doesn't turn out exactly the way you would expect.
What?
What? That's an unhealthy way to solve feelings after a breakup.
There's absolutely nothing that could go wrong with a plan like that.
I feel like personally, I don't have much to say about this movie. Like, it was all right. I think it was a bit too long. And then there were some funny moments, because I think, like, you obviously have two experienced comedians in this role. So there are some jokes, but overall, I was just kind of like, yeah, I watched that. I had no, like, well, I really got to say this thoughts.
Yeah, it was okay, as you said. It was fine to watch on, like, a weekday, which I did do. I don't have any, like, strong feelings towards it. I think it's just little ho-hum. It was funny in bits. I think funny in a different way to what we'd expect from these particular comedians. I think that's always going to be something that is hard to unsee when you have. So I think we've seen Jenny Slate in other comedies. So I think Obvious Child really comes to mind, as well as her roles in Parks and Rec, that kind of thing. But I think also Charlie Day, his particular acting style is very particular. if anyone's familiar with It's Always Sunny, it's like really like obnoxious humor, a little bit slapstick sometimes, and very like in your face, rude, whatever. Whereas this comedy is much more subdued, and I think that that's a good thing in a way, because, you know, we're giving them like space to show off their actual acting abilities. But I think when you set up with that expectation and then like the comedy kind of falls flat a little bit in some bits, where it's like, oh, this is a bit too serious and not enough funny, but they're trying to like interject that with like comedy because they're like, oh, we've got two great comedians, so we might as well like make use of them. I think there needs to be more, maybe like a more balanced approach, or maybe just like having fun with the comedy and being like absolutely ridiculous, because as you said, that plan that they had was like, it was stupid, like it's not gonna work. Like, that's fine, we didn't expect smart or sensible in a romantic comedy. That's okay, right? I think maybe they should have had more fun with it. And I think they did try to, but maybe like take that even further, like make it even more ridiculous. Like, that could have been really good, because I think they would have been able to take those scenes on board and like do something really good with them. But because it kind of like felt more restrained, more like serious, like, oh, we know we have to do like a serious romantic comedy where we're like actual adults and stuff, I'm like, oh, would have been more fun, I think, to have seen something. I don't know, just play along with it.
I do think they have a couple of like the more outrageous scenes, which were the ones that I maybe enjoyed. So for one example, Charlie Day's character takes Scott Eastwood, which is Jenny Slate's ex. They go out partying, and that's his sort of goal, is to show, oh, how nice is it partying? How nice is it clubbing? This is something you enjoyed with Jenny Slate, but you can't do it with your new girlfriend because she's not into it, and like, you know, convince him that way. And they end up going to a house with a bunch of girls they've met at the club. And here you have the incredible guest appearance from Pete Davidson, who's been in the media a lot recently, but he's playing such a Pete Davidson character.
Yeah.
Yes. What did you think about that?
I thought it was really funny. Yeah. Like, that was definitely a highlight for me. I was like, oh, Pete Davidson. I feel like I did not see him, but honestly made a lot of sense. And I think his humor really fit in with this particular scene, because it, like, you just come up and be his humor is like very dry, right? It's very like delivered in a monotone. It's not like slapstick or anything. I don't know how to describe it properly, but he just kind of comes up to Charlie Day's character is like, oh, that's my ex, by the way. Oh. Or like, I think he brought like drugs.
Yeah,
where did he say they were from? He said that they were his brothers or something.
Like, he was like, it's my stepbrother's dad. My stepbrother's dad. And he was like, your dad is like, no, or something. Or my half brother's dad. I don't know, something. It was like, clearly. Yeah,
so it's your dad. It's like, no.
He's like, but how is he not your dad?
Just like humor like that. I thought like he really fit in with the scene, and it would have been fun to have him even more in the movie. I don't know how they would have incorporated that, but I thought he did a really good job. And I don't know, because I haven't seen that many like Pete Davidson movies, to be honest. So maybe I've just surprised by the fact that he was actually funny. So that's why Kim likes him.
Because he's actually funny. Yeah. Kanye. Yeah. And I think that whole like sequence of events. So they're out partying and they go back to these girls' houses and they take drugs and do crazy things. And then in the end, they realize they're actually like 17 or 16 year old girls. And they're like trying to run away. They're like, oh, these are children. Like, we need to get out of here. And they're half naked because they've been swimming in the pool. And then the girl's dad arrives home and there's this like, I guess, confrontation with him and Charlie Day where he's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why are you here with my daughter? And he's like, how old are you? And Charlie Day tries to say, seriously, I'm 17. Like, it's just like this image of a clearly old man being like, I'm 17.
Like, he has this little beard. A laugh on me.
Yeah. Like, sort of dad bod, everything. Like, he looks exact same age as the daddy. Just him trying to, like, actually genuinely say, I'm 17. That got a laugh out of me.
Yeah, like some good moments. And like, again, so many like comedians in this movie. Like, we have Jackson from The Good Place. Like, he's in it.
I think I found him one of the funniest characters in the whole movie.
Like, I think he pulls off the I'm serious, but like, not really serious as well kind of acting. I think he's taken on some pretty good roles recently. I like that he's done that outside of his role on The Good Place and managed to expand on that character. But yeah, like some good comedians. I just like, I just wanted more comedy. I think just overall more comedy.
I think there were some like subtle lines as well. So yeah, Manny Jacinto's character plays like this tortured artist sort of thing. So he feels like he's a really serious artist, but actually he's only putting on plays in like primary schools or like junior high school kids. But he like takes it super seriously as though he's like changing the world or like, you know, challenging existing art forms and doing something incredibly dangerous, but he's really just putting on a play with kids. And I think there's this throwaway line where the kid is doing something with the lighting and then Manny Jacinto's character goes to him like, think more like Last Tango in Paris, which is like a Marlon Brando film, clearly very inappropriate for kids. Like, you would not want kids to watch that. And just like him seriously telling a child to mimic that movie is just sort of like, this guy's ridiculous. He thinks just so highly of himself.
Yeah, but also like, that kid probably has not watched that movie.
The kid, I think in the movie, the kid's just like, what does that mean?
The what?
Yeah, the what? I guess the whole point of this movie is they're trying to promote the idea of a slow burn romance. So Jenny Slate's character makes that distinction between a romance that's like instant chemistry, instant attraction versus someone who you get to know as a friend and slowly over time realize that you guys are meant to be or something. So it's trying to show that through the friendship of her and Charlie Day's character and how they, through these trials and tribulations, end up realizing actually they should be together. They shouldn't go back to their exes. They're the ones that really believe in each other and encourage each other. But I guess I didn't personally feel too much chemistry between the two of them. It was like too slow of a burn.
Yeah. I was literally going to ask you that. On the chemistry, I think they had good chemistry as friends, and maybe 100%, that's the thing. But I think because maybe it's just the setup of the movie, but I don't think, even though we do see them a lot, like they do genuinely have good like conversations, banter, whatever we want to call it, together, they actually really work well on screen in their scenes. Whether it's necessarily a romantic relationship, I think they needed to make that a bit more obvious, like more jealousy or like questioning of feelings and stuff. Because I think we just get a purely platonic friendship until the end, and it's just like, but this person, like, but we didn't even know that they, you know, you have to make it really obvious sometimes with, you know, a movie, how someone feels. Because I'm like, I understand what they're trying to do, but I would like to also like visually see it to get that reiterated by the film, right? That there is something there that's beyond friendship, because it is so platonic for the majority of the movie, which is fine. I think I would have actually preferred them to have stayed friends and just been like, we got, you know, we didn't get the people, well, one of us didn't get the partner that I wanted, or like, you know, the ending that I had envisaged for myself. But that's fine, because I made a really great friend out of that. We have really good fun, get great chemistry, and then friends forever. There's value in that, I think. And I think that would have worked really well. But I think, I guess, the whole point was that they would get together in the end.
Yes. Yeah, I think it would have been nice if they they just were friends, but then, you know, through this process, they learned more about each other, about themselves, and became more confident in themselves. So Charlie Day character is like, yeah, I actually want to start a nursing home, one that isn't exploiting old people. And she's like, yeah, I want to go back to school and actually like restart my life after my father's death. And that like bout of depression essentially is what she's describing. So I think it would have been nice if they just like lifted each other up and realized it's okay that the relationships are over, but like we can work on ourselves and have made a friend in the process. That would have been cute. Yeah.
I think so. I think that would have been a perfect ending considering the relationship in the movie. But I understand what they were trying to prove, I guess. I don't think it was necessarily achieved. So at the end, we were like, okay, that's nice. Like, it's not like, you know, you don't get like the warm fuzzies from them getting together. It's like, because you're kind of like, oh, it's fine that they're together. Like, not necessarily was like shipping them throughout the movie.
How'd you feel about that awkward threesome scene? For context, Jenny Slate's character tries to interfere with the relationship by suggesting a threesome to Manny Jacinto's character. And he's just like, yeah, of course, like I'm into it. And then the other party kind of feels pressured because she's been saying, yeah, I want to, you know, try explore, new things and explore my whatever. And so, so they get, she pushes it to the limit where it actually is going to happen. And they're on that day and she's trying to put it off as long as possible. So she's just like, let's dance. And they're doing weird, awkward dances.
Yeah. There's actually like a scene in Friends that's like similar to this. So when I think it's Chandler and Monica. So they're secretly dating. And they're like going behind everyone's back, right? Everyone slowly finds out. And then Phoebe is the one who's like, I'm going to try and seduce Chandler and like see what happens. And then like Chandler kind of goes along with it because he's like, she's like literally like putting her boobies in my face. Like I'm going to be like, yeah, let's do it. Even though obviously like you can say no, that like that's your friend. Whatever, it's friends. So it kind of really reminded me of that where you're like playing with fire. Like, like you have gotten this far. You can back out, of course. Like,
please,
but she's just like trying so hard to like prove a point, that she has to do like awkward like gestures and stuff to be like no. She eventually is able to like get out, but it's just like, did we have to go this far?
Did it have to come to this?
Yeah. Was there like no other way at all?
Yeah.
Like, there could have been alternatives, but I think it does make for like a funny scene because it's just like very like awkward and clearly so like something that everyone's uncomfortable with except for Maddie, and I think that's the joke, right? The
fact he's just like, yeah,
he's like genuinely like into this. So like I guess in the scene, the what's her name, I call her Gina,
Jane the Virgin
in the Virgin, yeah. I think her name is Gina, but I can't remember her last name. So Jane the Virgin leaves and then Maddie is like, so are we still doing this with the two of us? And she's just like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, your girlfriend just left, like, because she was so uncomfortable. And you're just like, well, so you're still up for it?
It's just the two of us now. But, yeah, there was comedy in that, like, little, in that scene. Because I guess, yeah, Manny's character is just so, like, airy.
Just like his character in The Good Place.
Yes, but I think he's worked on that enough that he actually can add character, like different characters to that airiness. I think he's actually done a really good job in creating spaces for those characters, even though they're quite similar, I guess, in their vibe. They're differentiated enough that you can like distinguish between them.
That's true.
Yeah. He can play, he can do it.
He can do anything.
He's an actor. He's
a beautiful cheekbones.
Yeah. Oh, he is cutie though.
Yeah. Yeah, would you recommend this movie?
I don't know. I mean, it's fine. If someone was like, oh, should I watch this? I'd be like, yeah, go ahead.
It's not my time you're wasting.
Yeah. I'd be like, it's not like offensive or anything. It's just like, yeah, like it's fine. I'd be like, it's good. It's just, it's fine. I don't know. If you had watched this, then I was like to you, should I watch this? What would you say to me?
Don't watch it.
Really? You would tell me not to watch it?
I would say there's better stuff that you could watch.
That is true.
I know there's just so much content out there. I would be like, don't prioritize it. Like maybe have it on the list. And if one day you're stuck somewhere, only Amazon Prime is loading, you can watch it.
I only have Amazon Prime and I really want to watch a romantic comedy.
Then I think maybe. Because I mean, the leads are charming. Jenny Slate is always charming. So you definitely have that element.
Honestly, it's not bad.
Yeah.
just not like
fine.
Right.
And you know what? I think it's because we watched Marry Me the week before.
True.
And that's just like, oof.
Yeah, I mean, they're different vibes, right? Like, Marry Me is just, like, so fluffy about, like, the hope of love and that whole ride. It's very, like, romance-driven, whereas this is, like, friendship-driven. So it's, like, it can't ever be the same. Like, again, slow burn versus very fast burn, I guess. You know, they're getting married from, like, the very first meeting. So I would say that that's a pretty fast journey that's been, like, fast-tracked, right?
Yeah.
Compared to this. So it's never going to be, like, the same. It'd be hard. But, yes, like, you don't get that full romance that you kind of want in that romantic comedy. I think, like, it's part of the plot line, but I think it's kind of to its detriment a little bit because you're kind of like, it's not as exciting. I don't want to go for that ride and be like, yeah, guys get together, but I'm not never really feel that way.
Mm. Well, there we have it. I Want You Back. The title Alice couldn't remember.
Well, I remember it now.
Yeah.
But ask me again in a couple of weeks. I'll be like, I don't know it.
Oh, I don't know. Let me Google Jenny Slate.
Oh my God, they remade Cheaper by the Dozen.
They remade Cheaper by the Dozen?
Yeah.
But why?
Very good question. But do you feel differently if I tell you Zach Braff and Gabriel Union are in it?
What? So Zach Braff as a dad? I'm and Gabriel Union as a mom? I like Gabriel Union as a mom.
Yes.
That changes everything.
It does change. It absolutely changes everything. Gabriel Union plays Zoe Baker. Zach Braff plays Paul Baker. And so do you know what that means?
Beautiful biracial children.
Yes, exactly. Tick, tick, tick. Wow, it's just the 2022 version of the exact same movie. We just have to add people of color. Imagine that. Too easy. Made more money.
In the original one, did they actually have 10 kids? Or were they, or 12 kids, sorry. I know what a dozen is. Okay, so they actually, I was like, I was wondering if it's like adopted or anything, but they actually had 12 kids.
Yeah, but I think the mother figure isn't there. Oh, no, there is a mother figure, sorry.
Okay.
I forgot that there was a mother figure because it's just very much centered around like Steve Martin.
Oh, so it's an autobiographical novel about someone who actually grew up in a household of 12 children. It's like based on real life.
But it's like basically real.
Wow. So it's like what, in the modern day, someone's chosen to have 12 kids?
Yeah, it's not like it hasn't happened.
Okay. Well, okay, we'll see what.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. It's not a priority. Right, next week, what are we doing?
Next week, let me consult the spreadsheet. Shall we watch Turning Red, the new Pixar offering?
Shall we or we will?
We shall, because I'm very keen to watch it.
Yes, very much. We've been looking forward to this movie for a long time because Pixar, I guess, being like the main draw
of it. Have you heard of them? Pixar? A little like studio? This,
like, yeah, very like niche animated studio. They just like make like little films. Yeah, can't wait. And that's coming out soon, actually, this weekend, I think. This Friday thing.
There is
March 11th. March 11th.
Yeah.
And then also, hopefully, we're able to talk about the Permission to Dance concert in Seoul. Unfortunately, not viewing it from Seoul, which would be ideal. And I guess actually was on the cards.
Alas.
Alas.
We went to Melbourne instead.
Yeah, it's not the same as you can imagine, but it was still good.
But this time, instead of streaming the concert from our humble living rooms, we will instead be joining our fellow Sydney Army and watching it at event cinemas.
Yay! Which I think will be so fun. Purely because of atmosphere and surrounded by community. So we're all there for, like, you know, drawn by the same love for BTS. I think it'll be really fun. I honestly think so. This is a big upgrade for us. We've gone from streaming it online and FaceTiming each other to streaming it online and watching it in the same room. And now we're going to be in the same room in a cinema.
Big screen.
Other people.
With other army, with our fellow army members.
With the fellow army. Yes, can't wait.
Yeah, so we'll tell you about that experience.
Yes. We'll a recap on the Permission to Dance stage.
So first they played Butter, and then they gave Permission to Dance, and then they went to Fire, and then they did Idol, and then they did this, and that'll be the podcast.
The end.
The end.
Apparently they're doing different set lists per performance. So I think there's one on Thursday. Is it Monday, Thursday, Saturday, or is it Thursday, Friday? I can't remember. I think there's three different actual events, but they all apparently got different set lists. Apparently.
I wonder what we'll get.
Because I haven't
what, they haven't told you?
They haven't told me yet. But well, yeah, I'm very excited. Really fun. I mean, we're always excited for more BTS content.
What are you gonna wear?
It's a good question. I feel like no matter what I wear, I will not look as good as the other people, so in a way it doesn't really matter. But anyway, I think it'd be really fun. So for something that feels like normal-ish in a way.
So yeah, excited for that, and thanks for listening, I guess.
Yes, and speak to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Do you want to do a Genki update?
Yes, let's do a Genki update.
Just off kilter. In our pursuit of finding the best cafe in Melbourne, we also discovered new flavours of Genki that aren't available in Sydney.
Wow.
Another reason why we should just move to Melbourne, to be honest.
Incredible cafes, the free trams, the city without hills that's in a grid formation. And now this.
Genki. So I think there was one night where I was waiting for you to finish your Harry Potter play, and I was just like eating a snack, and then I saw behind the lady a flavor of Genki I have not seen before. And I was like, what is that?
Is that Genki Forest? What flavor was it?
It was pineapple. I guess I said that. Oh, sorry.
Oh my God, we have a visitor.
Oh, sorry.
Oh my God, I think we got that recorded.
So it was like pineapple, and then I read the label and it was pineapple and salt. So it was kind of like, oh, interesting. It was actually really good. I actually saved half the bottle for you to try.
And then
I forgot. I left it in the hotel. Oh my God, so silly. I put it in like the hotel mini fridge, and then I forgot to bring it out that night, and then I forgot to take it out the next day as well. So like the person who cleaned my room,
I hope you found
my bottle of pineapple sea salt. I swear I'm not dirty. You can drink it.
I have good news for you, Alice. Because I recently checked the Genki website. You know me, I just love just checking out the latest and our favorite drink. And they now have the sea salt flavor on their website, the pineapple and sea salt. So I assume it is now more widely available.
Oh, very interesting. Well, that takes me to the next flavor. You also discovered a different flavor of Genki that we had not encountered on the website. Because we have seen the website. We've gone on their Instagram. We know what's out there. And so we were just taken off guard when we saw this in store.
It was pretty late in the evening. We're getting some late night snacks. And lo and behold, we looked at the fridge. What was there? Strawberry Genki.
Just strawberry, which is kind of what we were looking for. Remember, I was talking about the strawberry coconut flavor, and I was like, if only this was just strawberry.
Yeah, and you manifested it. The Lord heard your words.
Our beautiful city of Melbourne.
So, yes, we found a just strawberry flavor, which I snapped up. It said $4.50 on the label, but the guy only charged me $4, so thank you very much. Kind sir, at Dear Friday.
Shout out to Dear Fry, FryDay, by the
not
way.
Not sponsored, but, you know, if you're on a late night snack, they're open pretty late, so go there. Yes, we tried this new flavor. For me personally, it tasted like strawberry chubba chop in a drink form and carbonated, so I enjoyed it quite a lot, but it was pretty sweet and very candy-like.
Which is not bad, yeah. Not a bad thing.
I liked it, but I could see some people being put off by how, like, sugary and like lolly it tasted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've had like some other drinks where like it's a really like candy strawberry flavor and they haven't been pleasant. But I would say this one was quite nice because I think it's subtle enough that it's okay. Oh my God.
The cat is going insane.
He moved my laptop.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen the strawberry one on their website yet. Hopefully. Yeah.
But what I have, I did find more flavors of the Genki. I haven't tried them all, but I did try the calamansi and the peach.
Review?
I mean, I think you covered it, but basically, yes, they were good. Especially the peach one. I really like the peach one. I think that was a good one.
Yeah.
The calamansi, I think, was... I wish it was more flavorful. Mm. I wanted more like sourness.
Oh, like tang and sour. Yeah, okay. It's not, it's not that tangy. Yeah.
I think I wanted that a little bit, but it was fine. But yeah, the peach one is really yummy. I want to try the lychee one. I haven't found that one.
Yes.
Peach and grape are sort of top tier.
Agree. How many cans are you through of your strawberry coconut one?
I have drunk two.
Two out of four.
Careful. Oh, 2 out of 6.
It's 1/3 of the way through.
It's fine. Yeah. It's a slow burn. Yeah.
Just like Jenny said in Charlie Day.
Yeah. It's a slow burn. Yeah. It's not the ones that you like immediately, but it's the ones you like over a course of time.
Okay, well, Genki, please, if you're listening, we're big fans. We literally haven't stopped talking about you for like 4 episodes. So please, just send us free Genki.